Okay, on the middle of page 98. But the other Cyclops gather around the cave, and they say, "What ails you, Polyphemus, that you make such a noise, breaking the stillness of the night and preventing us from being able to sleep? Surely no one's carrying off your sheep. Surely no one's trying to kill you, either by fraud or by force." But Polyphemus shouted to them from inside the cave, "Nobody is killing me by fraud. Nobody is killing me by force." Now are your light bulbs going off? Who does he mean when he says nobody?
No one.
He means Odysseus. But who do they think?
No one.
They think, yeah, nothing's here. I'm just crying. Then the other Cyclops said, "If nobody is attacking you, you must just be ill. When Zeus makes people ill, there's just no help for it, and you had better pray to your father, Poseidon." Okay, wait, hold the phone. Two big things just happened. Number one, they buy it. They believe that no one's there, and they say, well, then you must just be sick. Because when you have, like, a tummy ache, all you can do is pray to feel better. And who should he pray to?
Poseidon.
Oh, snap. Poseidon's his father? That can't be good. What did Odysseus just do to the son of Poseidon? Yeah, uh-oh. Oh, some light bulbs are going off. Okay. Then the other Cyclops went away, and I laughed inwardly at the success of my clever stratagem. But the Cyclops, groaning in an agony of pain, felt about with his hands till he found the stone, and he took it away from the door. Then he sat in the doorway and stretched his hands in front of it to catch anyone going out with the sheep, for he thought I might be foolish enough to attempt this. As for myself, I kept on puzzling to think how I could best save my own life and those of my companions. I schemed and schemed as one who knows that his life depends upon it, for the danger was very great. In the end, I deemed that this plan would be the best. The male sheep were well grown and carried a heavy black fleece, so I bound them noiselessly in threes together with some of the withies on which the wicked monster used to sleep. There was to be a man under the middle sheep, and the two on either side were to cover him, so that there were three sheep to each man. As for myself, there was a ram finer than any of the others, so I caught hold of him by the back, ensconced myself in the thick wool under his belly, and hung on patiently to his fleece, face upwards, keeping a firm hold on it all the time. Let's pause for a second to make sure we understand this. So he grabs a bunch of sheep, and it's not like I'm a city girl through and through, but I've seen this on TV. How sad is this? So farm people, please correct me if I'm wrong. When a sheep has a fleece that is too thick, it's time to shear the sheep, right? And you take like the big electric clippers or whatever, and you shave it basically. So what you have is a big fat puffy sheep, and then at the end you have all the fleece on the ground, and the sheep is this skinny, pathetic looking thing. Obviously, Polyphemus isn't shearing his sheep. So they are a big, fat, puffy, cotton ball, fat old sheep, right? Ulysses takes them in groups of three, ties them together, which I can't imagine they appreciated, but it says he does this noiselessly, ties them together, and each of the six remaining men takes a group of three, gets underneath the group of three, and hugs the middle sheep. So I'm picturing it like a little monkey, right? He's got his arms and legs wrapped around it, and he's just like clinging there. What? So they're just clinging there, holding on to this group of three sheep. And Odysseus says, all except for me, because for me there's this one ram that's like super big and special, so I'm just going to use that one. And he's hugging that sheep belly. You have this pictured in your head? And Polyphemus all the while is blocking the exit. He moved the stone, but he's sitting in front of it, pretty much blind, feeling around to make sure he doesn't feel any human beings running out. Thus then did we wait in great fear of mind until morning came. But when the child of morning, rosy-fingered Dawn, appeared, the male sheep hurried out to feed, while the ewes remained bleating about the pens waiting to be milked, for their udders were full to bursting. But their master, in spite of all his pain, felt the backs of all the sheep as they stood upright, without being sharp enough to find out that the men were underneath the bellies. As the ram was going out, so it worked, right? All the men escaped because he's just feeling fat, puffy sheep. He doesn't feel that there are men underneath. As the ram was going out, last of all, heavy with its fleece and with the weight of my crafty self, Polyphemus laid hold of it and said, "My good ram, what is it that makes you the last to leave my cave this morning? You are not wont to let the ewes go before you, but lead the mob with a run, whether to flowery meadow or bubbling fountain. You're usually the first to come home again at night, but now you lag last of all. Is it because you know your master has lost his eye? Are you sorry because that wicked nobody and his horrid crew has got him down in his drink and blinded him? But I will have his life yet. If you could understand and talk, you would tell me where the wretch is hiding, and I would dash his brains upon the ground till they flew all over the cave. I should thus have some satisfaction for the harm this no-good nobody has done me. So Odysseus, hugging the ram's belly, Polyphemus pauses to talk to the ram, and basically he says, why are you so slow this morning? Well, we know why he's slow, right? He's got big Odysseus hugging his belly. But instead, the Cyclops says, I bet you're slow because you feel sorry for me. Aw, poor sweet ram. If you could talk, you would tell me where that bad guy is. Of course the ram can't talk, right? As he spoke, he drove the ram outside. But when we were a little way out from the cave and the yards, I first got from under the ram's belly and then freed my comrades. As for the sheep, which were very fat, by constantly heading them in the right direction, we managed to drive them down to the ship. The crew rejoiced greatly at seeing those of us who had escaped death, but wept for the others whom the Cyclops had killed. However, I made signs to them by nodding and frowning that they were to hush their crying, and told them to get all the sheep on board at once and put out to sea. So they went aboard, took their places, and smote the gray sea with their oars. Then, when I had gotten as far out as my voice would reach, I began to jeer at the Cyclops. So they do it. They get to their ships, and they steal all the sheep, the big fat sheep. But what does it mean, I began to jeer at shout the Cyclops? Taunt. Shout, taunt. Taunt is the perfect word. Right. Basically, he's going to go, na 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 boo boo. Cyclops, I said, you should have taken better measure of your man before eating up his comrades in your cave. You wretch. How dare you eat up your visitors in your own house? You might have known that your sin would find you out, and now Zeus and the other gods have punished you. He got more and more furious as he heard me, so he tore the top from off a high mountain and flung it just in front of my ship so that it was within a little of hitting the end of the rudder. The sea quaked as the rock fell into it, and the wash of the wave it raised carried us back toward the mainland and forced us toward the shore. But I snatched up a long pole and kept the ship off, making signs to my men by nodding my head that they must row for their lives, whereon they laid out with a will. When we had gotten twice as far as we were before, I was all for jeering at the Cyclops again. But the men begged and prayed of me to hold my tongue. So basically, he does his na-na-na-boo-boo, serves you right. Cyclops gets mad, tears the tip off of a mountain, chucks it into the water. When the mountain tip lands, it makes a wave. And what happens to the boat? It rushes back towards the Cyclops. And the men go, oh, snap, bad idea. Row for your lives. And then Odysseus says, okay, again, because we're twice as far. And the men say, dude, please don't. Do you think he listens? Do not, they exclaimed, be crazy enough to provoke this savage creature any further. He has thrown one rock at us already, which drove us back again to the mainland, and we thought it would have been the death of us. If he had then heard any further sound of voices, he would have pounded our heads and our ship's timbers into a jelly with the rugged rocks he would have heaved at us, for he can throw them a long way. But I would not listen to them, and shouted out to him in my rage, Cyclops! If anyone asks you who it was that put your eye out and spoiled your beauty, say it was the valiant warrior Odysseus, son of Laertes, who lives in Ithaca.
He just gives.
Yeah. Not only does he do the na-na-na-boo-boo thing, what information does he give?
His name and his address.
His name and basically his address. Yeah. What?
It's like an Iron Man 3.
Oh, I haven't seen that one. Great connection.
It's Facebook profile.
Oh, not smart. On this, the Cyclops groaned and cried out, alas, alas, then the old prophecy about me is coming true. There was a prophet here at one time, a man both brave and of great stature, Telemus, son of Eurymus, who was an excellent seer and did all the prophesying for the Cyclops till he grew old. A prophet, basically like a fortune teller, a guy who can tell the future. And the Cyclops is kind of saying, ooh, wait a minute, I knew this was going to happen. He told me that all this would happen to me someday. He said I should lose my sight by the hand of Odysseus, I have been all along expecting someone of imposing presence and superhuman strength, whereout he turns out to be little insignificant puny weakling you, who has managed to blind my eye by taking advantage of me and my drink. Come here then, Odysseus, that I may make you presents to show my hospitality, and urge Poseidon to help you forward on your journey. For Poseidon and I are father and son. He, if he so will, shall heal me, for no one else, neither god nor man, can do. Cyclops basically says, oh yeah, I knew this was going to happen, so come on back, you puny little thing, fight like a man. Then I said, Odysseus says, I wish I could be as sure of killing you outright and sending you down to the house of Hades as I am that it will take more than Poseidon to cure that eye of yours. So now he's not just taunting the Cyclops. He's taunting who else?
Poseidon.
Oh,
which
man.
He's using to travel.
We kind of want to do
home.
Like the whole face palm thing, right?
Like, are you kidding?
On this, the Cyclops lifted up his hands to the firmament of heaven and prayed, saying, hear me, great Poseidon. If I am indeed your own true begotten son, grant that Odysseus may never reach his home alive. Or, if he must get back to his friends at last, let him do so late and in sore plight. After losing all his men, let him reach his home in another man's ship and find trouble in his house. Holy foreshadowing, Batman, right? Thus did he pray, and Poseidon heard his prayer. Then he picked up a rock much larger than the first, swung it aloft, and hurled it with prodigious force. It fell just short of my ship, but was within a little of hitting the end of the rudder. The sea quaked as the rock fell into it, and the wash of the wave it raised drove us onwards on our way towards the shore of the island. This wave doesn't rush them back towards the Cyclops, it rushes them back towards the Paradise Island where the other ships are. When at last we got to the island, we had left the rest of our ships. We found our comrades lamenting us and anxiously awaiting our return. We ran our vessel upon the sands and got out of her onto the seashore. We also landed the Cyclops' sheep and divided them equitably amongst us, so that none might have reason to complain. As for the ram, my companions agreed that I should have it as an extra share. So I sacrificed it on the seashore and burned its thigh bones to Zeus, more respect for the gods. But he heeded not my sacrifice. Zeus does not like it, and only thought how he might destroy both my ships and my comrades. Thus, through the livelong day to the going down of the sun, we feasted our fill on meat and drink. But when the sun went down and it came on dark, we camped upon the beach. When the child of morning, rosy-fingered Dawn, appeared, I bade my men on board and loosed the hawsers. Then they took their places and smote the gray sea with their oars. So we sailed on with sorrow in our hearts, but glad to have escaped death, though we had lost so many comrades.